everyone is here, then perhaps we can start. I've just been told to turn my phone off. If I could ask that you all do the same. It's always a risk giving people prezzies in brown paper bags that you can rustle. I will find it quite distracting. Just as a minor point, those nice brown paper bags were boxes, cardboard boxes, carrying Primark goods from the Far East to the UK only about a month ago. The vast bulk of our packaging is recycled and turned into these brown paper bags these days. Anyway, let me start with saying welcome to these annual results for the 52 weeks ended the 17th of September 2011. The format is the same as in previous years. I will go through, therefore, the financial and business highlights before handing over to John when he's completed his financial look at the year. I will come back and go through the business of ABF sector by sector. The financial highlights then are these: group revenues were up 9% to £11.1 billion, adjusted operating profit up 1% to £920 million, and adjusted profit before tax also up 1% to £835 million. Earnings per share are up 2% to 74 pence. And the dividend per share will be going up by 4% to 24.75%. A year of heavy capital expenditure, investment of £825 million, and we ended the year with a net debt of £1,285 million. Business highlights. For a number of years, we've characterized this as a year of progress, and I hope to justify that statement later on. Strong business performances in a number of parts of the group, record profits in the sugar business, AB Sugar, and also at AB Agri. Twinings Ovaltine and UK Grocery both had very good years. And then Primark, we saw 3% like-for-like growth and significant space expansion. George Weston Foods and Ingredients, which I'll come back to, were disappointing. And then finally, this heavy capital investment, primarily, or the largest parts of which came in Primark selling space, 12% extra space and a capital bill of over £300 million. And then AB Sugar capacity increases, which I will come back to again when I talk more about sugar. John, if I can hand over to you.
George, thanks. So good morning, everyone. Turning to the income statement, group revenue increased by 9% to £11.1 billion, with growth in every business segment and substantial increases for Sugar and Primark. There were no acquisitions or disposals during the year. On a constant currency basis, and with last year's revenues restated on a comparable 52-week basis, the underlying revenue increase was also 9%. Adjusted operating profit increased by 1% to 920. I've included a table of average and year-end exchange rates at the end of your slide pack, but the only significant movement this year was the Australian dollar, which strengthened further against sterling. Overall, currency movements had no material effect on profit year on year, but with last year adjusted onto a 52-week basis, adjusted operating profit was actually ahead by 3%. The adjusted profit measure provides a true reflection of the underlying performance of the business and excludes profits less losses on disposal of non-current assets, which this year was small, a small profit compared with last year's loss, and the amortization of non-operating intangibles. This amortization covers those intangible assets acquired since September 2004 and was very similar to last year at £83 million. Unadjusted operating profit increased by 3% to £842 million. The profit of £28 million on the sale and closure of businesses last year primarily related to a gain on the sale of the Polish sugar business, net of a provision for the cost of closing the Queensland abattoir that was acquired with the KR Castlemaine business in 2008. No businesses were sold or closed in 2011. Net interest expense amounted to £92 million, and that compared with a £76 million charge last year. Average net borrowings were much higher this year, because of the high level of capital investment and the working capital funding requirement, which was also much higher as commodity costs prices increased during the year. Other financial income of £7 million compared with last year's expense of £8 million. As I explained last year, this is a consequence of higher expected returns on assets at the beginning of the year. Profit before tax was £6 million below last year at £757 million. Adjusted for the items referred to earlier, we delivered a 1% increase to £835 million. The tax charge actually fell from £194 million to £180 million, with a reduction in the tax rate from 25.4% to 23.8%. This reflects the benefit, which most of you will have factored into your models, of the 2% reduction in the rate of UK corporation tax from 27% to 25%. This yielded a credit of £12 million as the deferred tax liabilities were recalculated at the lower rate. We also benefited from the closure of a number of open years tax assessments in several different tax jurisdictions. Profit attributable to non-controlling interests was higher this year, largely as a result of improved profitability in our China sugar operations. Turning to tax, we usually look at the separate components of the tax charge, but this year only one adjustment is required to the reported charge to arrive at the underlying rate. If we exclude the credit that relates to the amortization of goodwill and intangibles, which are themselves excluded from the adjusted profit, the underlying rate fell from 26.8% to 24.6%. This is 2 percentage points lower than the 26.6% rate used at the half year. A little less than half of this reduction is the result of a fall in the UK corporation tax rate. You will recall that I explained at the half year that our underlying rate at that time took into account the announced reduction in the UK tax rate from 28 to 27% from the 1st of April 2011, but it didn't reflect the Chancellor's further 1% reduction to 26%, which also applied at the same date. The rest of the reduction in the underlying rate was the result of the agreement with various tax authorities and open year assessments. At this stage, it's worth noting that we expect next year's underlying tax rate to be higher than that this year. Although next year's tax charge will benefit from a further 1% reduction in the UK statutory rate from 26 to 25%, this will be also effective from the 1st of April, we think that the proportion of earnings of profit earned in countries with higher corporate tax rates than the UK will increase. And as a result, that will have an upward pressure on our underlying rate. Earnings and dividends. Adjusted earnings per share increased by 2% to 74 pence. Earnings per share were 1% below last year at 68.7 pence. Last year's earnings benefited from the sale of the Polish sugar business. A final dividend of 16.85 pence per share has been proposed, making a total dividend for the year of 24.75 pence, and that's a 4% increase. Dividend cover on an adjusted basis remains at 3 times. Coming on to the balance sheet now, net assets increased by £431 million to £6.2 billion. Sterling was weaker against the euro, Australian dollar and renminbi at the year end, with most other currencies little changed from last year. And that actually gave rise to a small increase of £91 million on translation of net assets. Intangibles were lower than last year as the amortization charge exceeded additions in the year. PP&E and other non-current assets increased by £573 million, and that reflected capital additions, which were substantially greater than depreciation in the year. As I flagged this time last year, working capital indeed has turned out to be substantially higher. It finished the year £231 million ahead. And this really was driven by three factors. Growth of the business obviously normally drives a higher working capital requirement. The second element is that, of course, high commodity costs inflated working capital. And the other thing we'd highlight is, and George is going to explain this later, that at the year end for Primark, we're in the middle of a substantial store opening programme, and that required a higher level of stock holding, not only for those stores that have just been opened, but those stores that are about to open during this autumn season. So looking ahead, commodity costs, I think, appear to be subsiding, and we do expect some benefit for working capital in the current year. We continue to pay close attention to cash management throughout the year, and importantly, our average working capital expressed as a percentage of sales for the group was little changed from last year. And actually, if we exclude Primark, that percentage expressed as a sales declined. Funding of this higher working capital and capital investment drove net debt £469 million higher at the year end to £1.285 billion. The group has total committed borrowing facilities amounting to £2.3 billion, half of which was provided under a syndicated loan, which does not mature until July 2015. £1.4 billion was drawn down on the total facilities at the year end. I think it's worth noting in these difficult times in the financial markets that there is a strength and a breadth in the syndicate of 12 banks which provides support to ABF and supports our financial needs, and I think properly reflects the scale and international presence of our group. The level of provisions fell this year, as much of the cost of rationalising the Australian meat business and Twinings tea production has now been incurred. We also settled provisions that had been acquired with the Azucarera sugar business, but these were offset by a corresponding receivable on the balance sheet, which has obviously also reduced. The net pension liability of £44 million on an IAS 19 basis has reduced since last year. And that's with the benefit of the third annual deficit reduction contribution of £30 million to the UK scheme, together with an increase in the market value of the UK's scheme's investments. And of course, remember that this year end is after some of the financial turmoil that was seen during August and early September, so obviously takes that into account. Non-controlling interests in the balance sheet at the year end fell by £24 million as we bought out the minorities in our North China sugar business during the year. Cash flow. Free cash flow was negative this year, an outflow of £185 million compared with last year's inflow of £402 million. And the main drivers, as you can see, were working capital moving from an inflow of £193 million last year to an outflow of £199 million, and that's for the reasons that I've already given you. And also, I think not unsurprisingly, a higher level of capital expenditure for Primark. Capital expenditure in the food businesses was again very substantial. Gross capital expenditure and the purchase of intangibles together amounted to £843 million. A number of major investments in long-term projects have now completed or are coming to an end. And so, just to mention a few of them, the development of the yeast and yeast extract plant in China is finished, expansion of our sugar interests in southern China completed during the year, construction of the Vivergo biofuels plant in the UK to finish this coming year, the same for the meat factory in Melbourne, and we also completed capital investments in Glasgow and West Bromwich for Allied Bakeries in the year that's gone. While we expect investment in Primark to continue at this level, so the sort of proxy there is around that £300 million mark, which shouldn't surprise you to sort of grow the estate at current levels, we do now expect to see some reduction in capital expenditure for the rest of the group. We made no material acquisitions or disposals this year, but we did spend $75 million, and that was buying out the minority shareholders in the North China sugar business, settling deferred consideration of Azucarera, and this caption also includes a loan to Vivergo to finance its construction. Let's just finally now turn to the segmental analysis. Revenue and profit growth was achieved by grocery, sugar, and agriculture, all of which maintained or increased margins. Although Ingredients and Primark both increased revenues during the year, their profit was lower. Maintenance of the grocery margin, despite a disappointing performance from George Weston Foods, I think was a good achievement in the year. And that reflects strong performances, particularly from Twinings Ovaltine and UK Grocery, together with the benefit of lower restructuring charges that we've talked about before. Most businesses carried higher inventory values, not volumes, but values during the year in grocery, and capital employed also included the full cost of the new meat factory in Australia and investments in Twinings and the UK bakeries. And so the return on average capital employed for grocery fell as a result. The substantial increase in profit at AB Sugar drove higher margins and return on capital employed. In ingredients, AB Mauri faced significant raw material cost increases and a highly competitive trading environment in some of its markets. George will tell you more about that. Commissioning costs of the new yeast and bakery ingredients plant in Harbin were also higher than expected, and margins and ROCE suffered as a consequence. Primark took a conscious decision to forego increased profitability in order to maintain its position as offering the best value on the high street. And so as a result, margins declined to 10.2%. I think I would remind you, though, that although the margin is down from 12.5 to 10.2 this year, the margin was 10.9% for Primark in 2009. The lower ROCE was also a function of an increase in average capital employed, which reflected both the higher stock holding and capital investment in actually a period of major store openings for Primark. Coming on to geography. Revenue increased in all regions. In the UK, profit increased with the good performance of the grocery businesses more than offsetting the decline in Primark. Lower margin and profit in Europe and Africa are the result of the weaker performances by Illovo and by AB Mauri in Europe. The lower profit in the Americas mainly reflects a small margin compression at ACH. And finally, in Asia Pacific, we had that big improvement in China sugar. And, you know, to show the scale of it, that more than offset the profit decline at George Weston Foods. And pleasingly, margins were maintained there. Thank you.
So then on to sugar, where we've seen another step change in profitability, up 31% in the year and a near doubling over the last 2 years. This has been the consequence of the recent capital investment, in particular Zambia. That large expansion is fully commissioned and is running at capacity. The Cadiz refinery in the south of Spain is also fully loaded. We benefited in a number of our markets from strong world prices, particularly in China and in parts of Africa, not to such a great extent in Europe in the year just gone. We were affected by the weather in a number of areas. The UK, for the first time since I can remember, we failed to produce quota. South Africa has had a drought that's lasted 2 years. Has taken production in that country down very substantially. And then in southern China, it was dry as well, and we'll come back to the consequence. I think we produced 415,000 tonnes there, probably about 100,000 tonnes less than we might have expected. Into the EU then, where profits on the back of that underproduction of quota reduced. We not only didn't make profit on the sugar we didn't make, obviously, but we also, in order to supply customers in this country, had to buy in sugar at extremely high prices to satisfy their requirements. Azucarera, though, improved significantly. The beet campaigns in the north and the south went well. The significant increase in the amount of cane sugar we produced from the refinery, and then pricing was good, particularly in the latter half of the year in Spain. Discussions have started on regime reform, which is the current regime runs through to 2015. I don't want to say too much more about that, other than to note the Commission's proposals and that the discussions with the Commission are underway. And finally, the bioethanol plant at Hull, we now expect to open for business spring 2012. In Illovo, the profit was lower, but is recovering in the second half. And with the drought now over in South Africa, we expect to see a good increase in sugar output next year. Prices in the region have been good, reflecting increases in world market prices. And as I say, the Zambia factory is now working extremely well. There's a second major expansion, which is now just complete in Swaziland. We've increased the capacity of that factory significantly. We've also installed power cogeneration. We're burning both bagasse and also field waste in that power plant to produce electricity, both for the site and also for the Swaziland grid. That investment in Swaziland was 1.26 billion rand, so a very significant investment now complete. In China, we saw major improvements, again, in both revenue and profit, both in the north and in the south. Prices were much better. In the north, beet production, sugar beet production doubled. We produced 210,000 tons of sugar from sugar beet against just over 100,000 tons the previous year. That was the consequence of an increased cropping area. We are gradually winning the confidence of growers in the northeast of China to plant sugar beet. And not least, that's because we are achieving higher yields, higher field yields from the beet that they're now growing. Cane sugar was constrained at 415,000 tons, but as I say, at much better prices. And then finally, the relocation in the northeast of a major factory at Zhangbei, which northwest of Beijing, is well underway, and we expect to have that completed by this time next year. Just to give you a couple of facts on the area and the yield of sugar in the northeast. 2009-10 season, half a million mu, there are 15 mu to the hectare, was planted to sugar beet, and this year 0.98 million was grown. The season just completed, that number was 1.4 million, and we expect our factories in the northeast to be essentially full on the back of the sugar beet, which has now been harvested in the northeast of China. Field yields then increased in the year that we've reported from 1.58 tons of sugar beet per mu to 1.94. So this is a project that sits on the back of increasing field yields and thus attractiveness of sugar beet for the Chinese farmer, and good progress is being demonstrated. On then to our agricultural businesses. Operating profit was up 21% to £40 million. It's a record year. We saw revenue growth in all the different parts of this business. We think that there is significant growth still to come here, not least in our specialty animal feeds businesses. The feed enzymes business is going extremely well, as are the specialty pig starter feeds and nutrition businesses, which are now an increasingly important part of our agricultural sector. We did undoubtedly benefit from volatility and high prices of agricultural commodities through Frontier, and that volatility, I think, will not, it seems less likely to repeat this year than last. But a really fantastic performance from the agricultural business, which is now hitting a scale which is really quite significant. On then to grocery. Very strong performances from Twinings Ovaltine and the UK grocery businesses. Evidently a lower restructuring charge. The supply chain work at Primark is just about complete. Difficult trading for George Weston Foods in Australia. And then significant capital investment in capacity expansion, efficiency and product quality. Capacity expansion obviously in Twinings, but also in the meat business in Australia. Efficiency, product quality, notably in the bakery businesses with projects completed at Glasgow and also at West Bromwich. Focusing then on Twinings Ovaltine, tea has had an extremely good year, growth in major markets, good growth in the UK, excellent growth in the US and in Australia. The Chinese factory is working magnificently well. The new Polish factory is up and running, and the final part of the supply chain work is expansions and alterations to the factory at Andover, and they should be completed early in the calendar year. I think it was also a year, it's time to salute the excellence of the commercial work that's been done and the marketing that's been done in Twinings brand that's driven these growth rates. Essentially, we aim to produce the best quality tea. A lot of effort has gone into product improvement. The packaging has always been a great strength of this brand, and packaging is being refreshed and improved all over the world. And then both in communication, and then the communications to the consumers has also, I think, reached a very high level. Ovaltine, finally, before I come back to a couple of examples of the communication within Twinings, we see a continuation of the trend that's been with us for a while of strong sales growth in the developing markets, both in the Far East, also in Africa and South America. Let me show you a little bit now of communication work at Twinings. We have two tasting bars at one at each Westfield shopping centre, at Stratford City and at Shepherd's Bush. The aim of this is to introduce the Twinings brand in an easy, accessible way to a wider audience. You can taste tea there. You can also, of course, buy it as well. And we've got good interest from there, from these two pop-up stands. We might well do more in other markets in the world. And now, for those of you on the webcast, apologies, you can't see the ad. I think it's the soundtrack that's the important part of this. But I want to show you a very, I think, a very fine piece of advertising that has been developed alongside Abbotsmead Vickers BBDO. It's part of our Gets You Back to You campaign for Twinings.
I know now just quite how my life and love might still go on. In your heart and your mind,
which was re-recorded for the advertisement, has gone to number 3 in the singles chart. It's been downloaded 1.13 million times in its first month, and that track has been viewed on YouTube 1.17 million times also in the first month. So a very, very fine piece of advertising created for and by Twinings. If I move on then to the rest of the UK grocery businesses and start with Jordan's Ryvita. Ryvita in particular has benefited again from excellence in communication. We really do seem to have turned a corner on volumes in particular for crisp bread. The premiumization of Ryvita brand continues, as does the expansion of the Ryvita brand into other savoury snack areas. Jordan's itself, much improved performance of that brand, particularly in Country Crisp and Frusley. World Foods, then, we relaunched Blue Dragon brand during the year. A lot of work in both product positioning and the promotion of that brand occurred during the year. It followed on a year after we did a similar exercise for Patax. Both brands now lead their sectors, so Patax leads Indian and Blue Dragon leads Oriental in this country. Some very fine work done indeed. On to UK grocery. Kingsmill traded well. Obviously, there have been tighter margins, higher promotional activity in the bread sector. I think chief executives of ABF have been saying that for 40 years. Two major bits of capital investment completed successfully on time and within budget at Glasgow and at West Bromwich. And we're pleased with the performance of LA Bakeries through the year. The reinvestment in the supply chain continues into this year as well with an important project at Stockport. Silver Spoon grew both its margin in white sugar, but also in caster icing sugar. We saw good growth there. And then home baking, particularly flour and bread mixes, we saw good growth there. ACH Stratus, we split the business a couple of years ago, you will recall. Stratus is absolutely on track now. Good profit improvement. The supply chain is streamlined. The management is in place and operating well. Food service, which this market in the States, which this business supplies, is still very difficult in terms of volume and price realization. But Stratus has had a good year. Very high levels of input cost inflation for ACH, obviously in vegetable oils, where corn oil prices went up by about 75%, I think, but also in spices, where both garlic and pepper and various other spices also increased in price very significantly. Good work done through the whole of the year in recovering almost all of that cost price inflation. That really was their task for the year, and they performed it well. Australia, we saw lower revenues and reduction in profitability. Two or three things going on here. Firstly, the whole Australian food manufacturing sector is struggling with two things. It's struggling with a high dollar, which is sucking in imports. So our cake business, for example, is competing with long life cake being imported from this country and being imported from Italy. And the margins that we make on a lower volume in cake are down. The second thing that's going on is, despite good GDP figures, the Australian consumer is saving a lot more than she was and is traded down, encouraged by the retailers in particular, who've been driving the cost of staples down significantly. We've seen a significant shift from branded bread into own label, and the margin reduction that has followed on from that has really been very significant indeed. The meat new factory is commissioning now. In the second half of the year, though, we were still running the plant in Altona, as well as commissioning the new plant at Castlemaine, north of Melbourne. The Altona is now closed. The commissioning in Castlemaine will continue certainly through the first half, and there will be significant costs associated with, inevitably, with that commissioning. There's a new management team in place in George Weston Foods. They have one other major activity underway on top of trying to get margin improvement, mix improvement back to bread and commissioning the meat factory, which is a reduction in the overheads. We've just announced a reduction in the head office overhead of over 100 people. There will be a one-off cost associated with that, but we've taken significant head count out of the center. It's the right thing to do in a business where growth, I think, for a couple of years will be harder to come by, particularly in margin, growth in margin. In ingredients, then, we've seen revenue growth in Maori, revenue growth in this business we've seen every year. We've seen every year a profit growth in Maori until now. We had very sharply increased molasses prices in the year. We recovered those in most markets. Most notably in Brazil, and I give the team there enormous credit, they saw the cost of molasses go from $200 a ton to over $500, and they got just about all of it back. The two markets where we didn't get raw material cost prices back were China and also in Europe. The consequence of that was very substantial. because the price rise that we didn't recover, the cost increase that we didn't recover was very substantial. We also, as John mentioned, commissioned Harbin through the year in the first half. That commissioning is now complete, but was expensive. The cost of that commissioning also affected AB Ingredients because the site makes not only yeast but also yeast extracts. Outside of that in AB Ingredients, there was good progress, particularly in the enzyme business. The animal feed enzyme business, which is partly in ABFI and partly in AB in the agricultural business, is growing very, very strongly, something over 50% growth in the year just gone, with an expectation we'll see something similar this year as well. But we also had made good progress in bakery and also specialty, which is a sort of catch-all for everything else that's not food. On to retail, then. 13% revenue growth. Profits obviously down as we invested in the margin. Like-for-like sales growth net of VAT were up 3%. We had growth both in the UK and in Ireland, and we continued growing strongly in continental Europe. 12% increase in net selling space, 7.3 million square feet we now have opened. We certainly maintained price leadership in the high street, which was our ambition, even with all the discounting that was also going on and continues to go on in the high street. An important work then in the warehouse network, which I will take you through in a moment, and also store design development, which we've got another video on coming up. So Primark margins, yes, down from 12.5% to 10.2%, as John indicated, lower than 2009, which was at 10.9%. We absorbed the bulk of the VAT increases and also these higher cotton prices. We expect to benefit this year from the lower input costs, which will start to arrive in store from about January. So we'll see the benefit, I expect, in the second half of the year, and of course it'll be on a business which is significantly bigger than was previously. Sales have grown 25% in Primark over 2 years. It's a big number. Area then, a little bit more detail on the selling space expansion. We grew space in the UK by 10% and now 5.2 million square feet. We opened 11 stores. In Iberia we opened five stores, up by a third. We've now got 24 open. That's 20 in Spain and 4 in Portugal. And northern continental Europe, Belgium, Holland and Germany, we're up to 7 stores, but they're big, 320,000 square feet. And I'll show you some of the stores which are opening actually in all regions through the rest of the year. Onto the warehouse then. When we started our continental expansion, we were supplying first Spain and then a northern continental Europe out of our depot in Nace in Ireland. We've built a new depot there which we own and which is now fully operational. It's no longer supplying Spain because we have 2 warehouses now side by side just north of Madrid, which have full capability to distribute all products in the Primark range to Spanish stores. So Nace continues to supply Northern Europe for the time being, but we will have a warehouse open by the summer of next year in Northern Europe, and that then will allow Nace to become the supply chain centre for just Ireland. If any of you have been down to Stratford, you'll see a store which has moved on in terms of being more contemporary, improved layout, merchandising is better, and the windows have taken a great step forward. Rather than trying to explain that anymore, and again with apologies to people on the web, but we've got a short video which we put together to explain what we've done.
Right. Wow.
Wow, a lot.
The layout is completely different to the normal ones that we see every day.
Yeah, it's so much and wow. In this Primark, it seems everything's more organised, in place, so you know where everything is.
When I actually see a mannequin with something that I like on, I can see where the clothes are immediately.
Well, good quality gear and good prices.
Well, the customers have come in and said it's merchandise a lot better. They can see exactly what they're looking for.
Yeah, they've really enjoyed the new layout, the new decorations, the new concept.
We're always looking to innovate and improve our store environment for our customers. So it's been a really exciting couple of days to have two new stores opening with two new concepts, but in two different countries.
You're all now ready to deliver the Primark culture and ethos. And all willingly, with a smile, with pride, and with quality service to our esteemed customers.
The customer will see an improved level of visual merchandising. They'll see more mannequins, they'll see more outfits, they'll see more looks.
There's also increased navigational signage, made stores brighter and lighter, and we've made a substantial investment into new fixtures, which allow our customers to shop and get the same densities, but shop in an easier way.
The staff are working extremely hard today.
It's been manic today, but it's been an amazing experience so far, actually.
It's setting the bar for more Primarks now going to be opening to reach this level.
The team have really pulled together to make the new concept. A lot of people were involved in this.
Everything that we've learned from these two store openings will be applied to any future store design concept. So we will just keep moving, keep staying one step ahead of the competition.
The new concept will make sure that customers not only can get the basics from Primark, but also establish our fashion credentials. So if you look at the videos, the POS, all of that has got a much more fashion feel to it.
The most exciting thing about our new concept stores is that they are inspirational.
Unique.
Affordable.
Fun. On trend.
It's amazing fashion, amazing prices.
Just one big adventure.
Okay, going on to the major store openings of the year, this won't be the complete set, but I wanted to give you an indication that there are some very important stores which have either just been opened or will be opened in the next 12 months. The top six we've got away on time in these first 2 months of the year. The reaction to them has been startlingly good. I'll show you some footage from Hanover in just a moment. And then coming up, a 90,000 square foot store in Essen, Edinburgh, which we've been waiting to enter as a city for years and years and years. That will finally be open 10th of December. Saarbrücken, then Berlin, and how we're looking forward to being opened in Berlin. And then the second store in Oxford Street, which we hope to be open in time for the Olympic Games. It'll be bigger than the one at the Marble Arch end of the store. Now, Hanover, in just a second, there were 5,000 people waiting to get in on the first day. 100,000 people visited the store in the first 3 days. We had our busiest hour trading on the first day of any Primark hours trading ever. I know I share anecdotes on Germany, but with only five stores, I'm sort of slightly constrained on what else I can say. But again, sorry to the web people, but the noise is actually a major part of the impact, I think, of this short footage. This is as we opened the doors on day one. Reason for enthusiasm for Germany. Capital investment then across the group, if I move on to it. Now, major area spend over the last 2 years. You can see the increase in the cost of opening a Primark selling space as the rate of increase accelerates. Over £300 million in the year just gone against 200 in the year before. I suspect that we will remain at that sort of 300 million level for some years to come. You can also see the amount of investment that's been going into the sugar business, over £200 million in the year just gone, after 225 the year before. I suspect that that number, particularly when Vivogo is complete, will come down somewhat. Completed during the year, just to repeat what John said earlier, Twinings both in China and Poland, Swaziland Sugar, Harbin Yeast, and the two bread projects, and expecting to complete in this year Vivogo, the Australian meat factory, which is commissioning, as we say, and that list of Primark stores and a few more too. Quite an important number. We have, in just those three above, Vivogo, Australia, and the Primark stores, which we expect to open this year, we have got £500 million, or a tenth of the balance sheet, in those projects which are not yet operating but will through the year. So just to summarise, a higher level of investment in Primark continuing, expected to continue. The other investments expected to decline somewhat, not in the current year, but in the year ahead, a year beyond that 12-13. So looking ahead, economic growth in developed economies, I think I'm generous in saying subdued. I think it is clearly very difficult, as is the pressure on consumers' disposable income. In the year that we're in now, though, higher sugar pricing will be of significant benefit to us. Commodity costs do appear to be subsiding, so all those headwinds, all those conversations that all our sales teams had with their customers in the retail trade this year, I suspect we will be spending less of our time this year than we were last doing that. And then the returns on recently completed capital investments, we'll start to see benefits from them. So looking ahead, I think we all look ahead 8 weeks into this year with a fair degree of enthusiasm. If I stop there, John, you and I perhaps can take questions now. So thank you very much for your attention.
Polly is the first one with the hand up, so I think you get the microphone first, Polly. Yeah.
Thanks. Good morning. So it's Polly Barclay from JP Morgan Cazenove. Could I ask a question on Primark, please? And perhaps you could explain whether we'll see all of the lower cotton price come through and benefit Primark's margin in the second half of this coming year. And perhaps you could make some comments on potential price investment also for us. Thank you.
No, I've been talking about that.
All right. Look, I think that it really does depend on the retail environment that we'll be looking at when we get into 2012. Very clearly, the input prices are going down. I think it's important to say that we would like to take some margin from those lower costs as we go into next year. But I think the sort of guidance that we've been given is don't write it up just yet. The high street is a very competitive place. Over the autumn, we've seen lots of discounting, which has carried on from the summer. So we just need to have a look generally at what retailer behaviour is out there. James.
James Edwards Jones from RBS. Three very quick questions, if I could. Why did your depreciation fall for the year? It looks like it was down from about 2.5% of revenues to 2.2%, which seems at odds with the rising capex that you're talking about. To what extent did Allied Bakeries benefit from the mishaps at Hovis, and what sort of trend should we look for there? And finally, could you just give an idea in, say, 5 years' time how you think the footprint of Primark will look, sort of geographically in terms of store size and so on?
Let me have a go, and then, John, you chip in anything more. The depreciation in the year before, in the year 2010, we accelerated the depreciation of a couple of big Primark stores because we were redeveloping them. So the depreciation charge in the prior year was a little bit higher than it would naturally have been. On bread, Hovis is one of our competitors. We have many others too, and we, as I pointed out, Kingsmill has put on share, Allied Bakeries has put on share, but
not a huge change in that business. The third, the Primark footprint.
We'll keep on going as we are. We would like to open stores in Germany as the sites become available. Holland is an excellent market. Belgium is starring. Spain, we're not on any high street yet. We're just in shopping centres. Whether we enter new markets, I think, will depend slightly on the rate at which we can find space in the existing markets. It would be much easier to grow fast in existing markets where we've got an infrastructure, then create that infrastructure again in new markets. But we are open to other opportunities in Europe, having said all that.
Jeff Stone.
John, you sort of implied when you were talking about tax that the proportion of profits outside the UK would increase this year, and just given what will be happening with British Sugar, I'm a little bit sort of surprised at that. Can you add any sort of colour around that? Thanks.
Sure. Look, I mean, it really is just looking at the mix of profits of where we are. I mean, I think there was the benefit in the year of some closing out of some of the open year assessments, so there was some sort of benefit from that in the year. So that won't recur. And I think we are looking, obviously, at growth in profits outside of the UK. So that really was the indication. So, you know, 26.5% is the sort of feel we've got for the underlying tax rate in the coming year. No, we're not. But I mean, in terms of the other countries, I mean, some countries you've got really quite high tax rates. I mean, you're going at 35. The US, if you look at it, is 40%. So, you know, it's a sort of an increased mix of those that actually is driving it. Jeremy, yeah.
Morning, Jeremy Fialco at Redburn. Couple of questions. First one on Primark. You've spoken about this new store design and layout. Now, the chap on the video said that you're getting the same sort of sales densities, but is there a higher, much higher capex cost that goes with it, or is it just you found a better way of sort of organising the thing? And secondly, on Chinese sugar, you're at about 200,000 tonnes now. Where does that go over the next year in the north of China, that is? Thanks.
In the north of China, I suspect we'll be up 240,000, 250,000 tonnes in the year, in the campaign that we've entered. The capex cost of that new store design is not significantly higher than the existing. With a lot of the developments that we are undertaking, the bulk of the cost is in infrastructure. It's in escalators, it's in wiring, it's in all the basics. That's what drives the spend at the moment. A lot of these German stores that we're opening, we really are stripping back to bare walls and then kitting out from there.
Let's take Martin from the back and we can hear near the microphone.
Thank you. Martin Dewey, Investec. Couple of questions within sugars, gentlemen. On Vivergo, my understanding is Ensus, the other big bioethanol plant, is mothballed indefinitely. So can you just talk us through, are you comfortable opening Vivergo? Are BP comfortable opening Vivergo? Just some colour around that would be helpful. On sugar, clearly things are going very well, but this is a cloud on the horizon. George was saying outside, it's cane processing in Europe, where the former Tate and Lyle look like they're going out of business. So can you run Guadalete profitably? And what about your plans to refine cane at Cantley? Just where's your sort of European cane strategy?
We can run Guadalete profitably. Obviously, with very high cane prices, the profitability is squeezed to some extent. But it's still positive. On Vivergo, yes, we will open it. Yes, it will be profitable at the current mix of wheat prices and ethanol prices and feed prices. That's the other dynamic. I don't know any great detail about Ensis, but I think they have issues beyond simply that mix of ethanol and wheat input prices. Sorry, your third one?
Cantley.
Oh, Cantley.
Plans to do cane at Cantley, I mean, where is that still viable or is the
option? Sorry?
Remains an option.
It remains an option, but it's not underway at the moment. I think things like that have to wait for more certainty on regime reform.
Let's pick off this side, Alex, at the front here, and then we'll move over to the other side. Yeah.
Thanks. Good morning. It's Alex Smith from Nomura. I was just wondering if you could talk a bit more about your comments on favourable pricing for sugar. I guess I'm particularly interested in Europe. If you're able to put any quantification on the magnitude of pricing we should expect in the coming year versus next year. And then how we should think about it in the years to come. I mean, presumably, looking at the world sugar price, we'll expect the price to ease as we go forward. But are we talking about going back to 2010, 2009 levels? Should we look at something in between? And maybe talk a bit more about the global supply and demand structures. Is that benefiting ABF structurally? Are you in quite a good place or not?
There's an excellent report on the long-term pricing scenarios for sugar that was produced by Zarnico. We could probably send you a copy of it. I think that there are a number of things going on in global supply. Clearly, demand is still increasing at about the same rate of a couple of percent a year. Brazil have failed to invest in crop renewal in the last few years, and it's been their production shortfall recently that has so shocked the world. India, no one is ever quite sure how much sugar they're going to produce from one year to the next, or even in the year in which they're in, how much they're going to finish with. There have been surprises on the upside in production, particularly from Thailand, last year. And this year, Europe and Russia have produced a lot more sugar than people would have anticipated us producing. I suppose I have a view on most agricultural commodities that the supply chain is surprisingly resilient. We see world wheat stocks at the highest levels in 10 years. I'm not sure that 18 months ago many people would have anticipated that. So generally I think that if where you see very high prices, you usually see a supply chain reaction. Sugar in the longer run is a marvelous precursor chemical for industrial plastics and all sorts of things, and demand for sugar may come out of that. So I think in the long term, I agree with Zarnico that the demand for sugar and the price of sugar will be higher than in the past. But in any given year, once the sugar is grown, it's grown and the price will move to clear it. I can keep mulling for as long as you want, really. But I think in Africa we are well placed. In East Anglia, we're very well placed for both the reform and also for the here today. I think we can produce sugar, we can grow sugar, and we can process it much more cheaply than most areas of Europe. Africa, clearly we have access to some of the best sugar-growing land in the world. And in China, we have nice protected, we're protected by government regulation and import tariff. And I think that's likely to remain in China.
And are you able to put any quantification on your expected levels of pricing, just roughly?
No, look, I think if you read reports, every year people default back to, it's sort of 22 cents. But I don't think that's an any more necessary result than any other number. It's probably the marginal cost of production in new land in Brazil. But that won't set the price in a given year. It may set it in the long run, but it won't set it in any given year. So I'm always skeptical about trying to call the future sugar price.
So I meant your pricing to customers in Europe. Our
pricing to customers in this negotiating round has gone up. John, do you want to be any more specific?
Some hundreds of euros over the reference price. I mean, I think that's really. Clearly it's customer pricing, so we've got to be sort of careful on that.
We also made cautious. It was looking good last year, and then we had this frost, and it took 60 million quid off us.
Yeah.
I bought a piece of it was a wood splitter from someone who promised me that it was going to freeze hard in October. Who knows? I mean, we did get badly hit by the frost last year, and it may happen again. It hasn't happened before for a while. The crop, it looks absolutely magnificent at the moment, but we're 6 weeks into the campaign.
I think on that note, Warren, yes, over there. Yes,
before I tell you what else I've been trying.
Warren Ackerman over there. Yes, I could see him with his hand up.
Good morning, guys. It's Warren Ackerman here at SG. John, I heard your comments on working capital and CapEx for the current year, but would you expect free cash flow, which was very negative this year, to be actually positive next year?
That's yes, I do expect it to be positive. And so sort of net debt, absent anything sort of major, I'd expect net debt to edge down from the levels at the end of this year.
Okay, thank you. And just a couple of others. You said that profit would be second half weighted this year. I guess that's mainly because of the lower cotton kicking in as of the second half. Is there any other factors holding back profitability in the first half of 2012?
Yes, I mean, the other thing that George mentioned is we'll be taking a one-time charge which will not be treated as exceptional, so it'll be within adjusted operating profit for the cost reduction in Australia. And to give you a feel for that, it's in the teens of millions of pounds. So, you know, you just need to factor that into your grocery number. So it's that one-time cost. And, you know, quite frankly, Primark's profit in the first half of the coming year will be pretty flat on the first half of last year, with the growth in Primark profit coming in the second half.
And just finally, on Australia, you said in your comments that Australia was disappointing. Just wondering whether you can outline what profits did in Australia year on year, and are you expecting any improvement in Australian profits for the current year? And for George, you know, how much patience do you have with Australia? Clearly, there's a lot of invested capital that's gone into that market with not much return.
Look, there are three things we've got to do in Australia. We've done one already, which has reduced the cost of the central overhead. The second one is that Castlemaine factory needs to be commissioned. Now, that'll take some months, but will give us a cost base which is well below the one that we've had before in the meat business. And the third point is that we need to improve the mix and the pricing in bread again. And that is, you know, that's hard work with our retail customers to persuade them of the merit of increasing their branded share of their offering. Fix all three and Australia will be in great shape.
Look, I mean, I'll give you the profit reduction in Australia this year was, let's say, around the £25 million mark, and absent restructuring costs, we would expect to see a little bit of recovery in that in the coming year. Obviously, restructuring costs will take it down from there. Graham, yeah.
Graham Jones from Palmier. John, just to follow up on Warren's question about the phasing, just to clarify, you're not suggesting that H1 profits overall for the group is going to be flat?
No, we're not. So I think maybe people have certainly seen in the chairman's comments the phasing into the second half. No, I'm not trying to indicate that the group as a whole will be flat. We think we will get profit growth clearly from the other businesses, but it's obviously some of those, particularly that the Primark weighting and the Australian one-time costs, would sort of weight the first half.
Okay.
So it isn't a negative outlook on the first half by any means.
Okay. And George, just on Illovo, do you expect sort of the crop to bounce back to sort of the 1.8 million tonnes we saw in the previous year?
I think it could. Maybe not all the way back, but significantly back. There's been a lot of very good work done, both by state and national government and also by ourselves, on repairing some of the damage that the drought has done. In particular, in supplying working capital into the grower base, I think there's a good chance that South Africa will bounce right back to perhaps not the heights it reached sort of 3 or 4 years ago, but much better than the existing level. And we should also get growth outside South Africa.
Okay. And finally, can you talk about the outlook for sort of profit recovery in ingredients? What's happening to molasses prices? Yeah. Is the Harbin factory now running efficiently?
Yes, Harbin is now running well. There's potential to reduce the costs there further, that work is well underway. Molasses costs in China remain high. With the greater availability of sugar beet in the northeast, the amount of corn syrup that we're having to put through that Harbin plant will reduce, and therefore the substrate cost will come down somewhat. But just to give you an indication, that, you know, molasses prices traditionally in China have been about 800, 850 RMB per ton. They got up to 1,400 in the north. We're looking at sort of 1,200 now. So it's come off a bit, but not back to where it was. So I think the recovery in China will take a little while. Molasses prices in Europe have come off again somewhat, but there's further work to do on top of the margin that comes back with that.
Yes.
Yes, Rosie Edwards from Goldman Sachs. Just one quick one on Primark. Wondering if you could just give us some colour on the like-for-like in current trading, i.e. the first sort of 2 months of the year, in line with the previous year, i.e. sort of flat to 1%? Or have you seen a boost from the store openings?
Look, I mean, I think we're very disinclined to really give like-for-like sort of trading over a short period of time. I don't think it would surprise you to know that trading just at the beginning of the new financial year was certainly very weak, particularly with the very warm weather, here in the UK. I think it's best to say that we're actually trading really well at the moment, and so I think like for likes are fine, and I think George has said that we're really doing well on these new store openings. Now, that obviously won't be reflected in the like-for-likes, but they really are flying at the moment. Right, yeah, Dirk.
Thanks, hi. It's Dirk van Vlaanderen from Jefferies. Just a quick question on the Primark expansion and the margin implications for growing and expanding in Europe. Are there any, how should we be thinking about that, and with the new distribution plans coming on stream, would that be beneficial to margins, etc.? Thanks.
Yeah, the labour, not surprisingly, the labour cost in Germany is higher than it is in the UK, and the distribution changes will take substantial supply chain costs out of our supply into Germany. I don't think I want to quantify either. Really? Do you, John?
No.
But no, beneficial in the, yeah. Well, I mean, what we're benefiting from Germany is extraordinary store densities, sales densities at the moment.
Yeah, Bob.
Morning, Bob Altman at Merrill Lynch. Just to put the context around the guidance, we've got profit growth in first half, second half weighted though in terms of full year delivery, tax rates a bit higher than this year, 10% of balance sheet yet to really contribute returns. When I think about that, consensus post today's beats around plus 15% on EPS. Is that a level that we're comfortable with? How do we think about that?
Sorry, it was probably a slight use of the word. What was the beat? Sorry, say
that. There's a 2% beat at adjusted EBIT today.
Yes, for the current year.
For the current year. So if I flow that through to the base, consensus was looking for around 18% EPS growth, according to Bloomberg.
I think it's not really for me to comment on the consensus. The thing that I would say is that you should have heard words here to very much support, I think, the outlook for Primark, for sugar. I think probably the new news for you is we have got some costs coming through in Australia that you probably need to factor through. So I look, without saying anything more, I think those are the major factors you should think of.
Okay, thank you.
Alan at the front.
Thank you. Alan Erskine from UBS. Just two quick questions. One, John, can you quantify what the commissioning costs at Harbin turned out to be for the year? And presumably then that's an add back for...
In terms of the sort of one-time costs, mid-single, high single digits of millions is the sort of cost that we had coming through.
And then just in Spain, where you have stores that have been open now for, you know, a year, 2 years plus, I mean, what sort of like-for-likes are you doing in those sort of mature stores at the moment?
Mid-single digit positive. So it's still going well. And remember, that builds on, you know, sort of 20% like-for-likes or so for last year. So I think still really quite strong. Maybe just with the time, should we just take maybe one? Yeah.
Thanks. It's Alicia Forey with Colin Stewart. Just three quick questions. One, in the sugar division statement today, you talk about operational innovations that helped you to mitigate the shortfall in beet production in the UK. I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on what those were exactly. And then secondly, your outlook for real estate availability in continental Europe for Primark store expansion, how you see that shaping up over the next few years. And just finally, if you could remind us on Vivergo, where exactly that is going to come through, which division that is coming through into. Is that sugar or animal feed? And is it your proportion of the overall JV, or is it just the animal feed products that you'll be booking? Thank you.
Okay. If I answer that last question first, it'll come through sugar, but there will be benefits to agriculture. We will be supplying the wheat into that plant, and we will be disposing of the co-product animal feed ourselves. So we'll have our share of the joint venture profits coming through in sugar, and the rest will come through in agriculture. The technical stuff about what we did in response to the damaged beet. We processed, and this is one of the reasons why profitability came through strongly in the second half, we did a marvelous job at processing much more contaminated, so soil and other non-sugar contaminants, of sugar syrup than we'd ever managed before. It took a lot of innovations around cleaning filters, using enzymes to get this stuff through that we didn't, quite frankly, back in March, think we were going to be able to process at all. So we extracted much more sugar from the sugar syrup than we had thought. There was also very good work done, not least in conjunction with the Farmers Union, on getting the processable sugar into the factories when the freeze and thaw occurred. So we completely rescheduled the delivery of beet into the factories through that period, and that was probably as beneficial almost as the work done in the factories. In terms of availability of space, I think you can anticipate the rate at which normal store acquisition work, the property teams can source stores at. I think you can probably say in Germany it's a bit better because there is more big space on high streets than there might be in this country, and certainly there is in Spain. What we can't anticipate is when blocks of stores might come available in any of the markets in which we operate. Big stores on high streets are almost impossible to find in Spain. They're very difficult in the Netherlands. They're very difficult in Holland. Germany, there are some. And then there is shopping center development that has been at the center of our expansion in Spain to date. If that gives you some sort of flavor, then good.
Do I have any final questions? Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, everyone.